Wackly won't say that's disgusting. I'm recording.
I think I must have deleted the photo.
What's it of?
My Lego pyramid. You better not be videoing me.
Course, I'd never do that. I was just hoping.
Listen, listening to Synchronon. Sick and Ron. Yes, you listen to Sick and Ron.
The Sick and Wrong, the world source for antisocial commentary.
God, what a bunch of scumbags.
Good evening and welcome to Sick and Wrong, the world source for antisocial commentary. I'm on your host, D. Simon.
Hi, I'm Kate Rambo. Hiya, guten Tag.
What's the crack there, Kate Rambo?
Nothing. I'm feeling poorly.
Feeling poorly?
I am feeling poorly. This week I've been thinking about Lovejoy a lot and how much I look like Lovejoy and I am like Lovejoy, but I wish I had Lovejoy's waistline at the minute.
Yeah, Lovejoy was, well, back then, Ian McShane, that would have been what, the early 80s?
Mid to late 80s slash into the 90s. So what I remember most from my childhood is Lovejoy and Heartbeat.
Well, he was, Ian McShane was pretty slim and trim back then.
He's still slim and trim. He's a handsome man. He's a handsome,
he is a good looking guy.
From the north.
Lancashire, right? Did you tell me that?
Wankershire. That's
Wankershire.
Where he's from.
So when Lovejoy, he's kind of like a British Columbo.
Yes.
More or less. Solving crimes.
Yeah, but he works in an antique store and he knows everything about antiques. So I've kind of grown up to become a female Columbo, Lovejoy.
Wait. Is he a gay man that works in an antique store?
Are you saying I'm gay?
No, but a lot of men who work in antique stores tend to be gay.
Lovejoy slays pussy.
Okay.
There's a lot of pussy. Like, I don't think you ever actually see him have sex, but there's a lot of flirtation.
And
I need to rewatch him.
He's not a detective. He's just a antique store owner.
No. They use the word tinker a lot, which I, like, some people won't like, but whatever. I've said worse things on the show. He comes, he works in an antique store. He knows everything about every antique in the world. And it's kind of like, who are those Nazi couple, the Warrens? People will come to him and be like, oh my God, this cross that someone else has stolen, you need to go and find it. And then he'll get into scrapes. It's Columbo-y.
But it surrounds like antiques or objects.
Yes.
Rather than like, Columbo was like a cop.
And
then,
another
like,
thing. He was a PI.
Yeah, but private, I thought he was a cop, actually.
I think he was. Was he working for the police? I love Columbo, too, but I feel
it's
like
been
he
a while
was,
since I've watched it.
My favorite Columbo fact, though, is did Columbo have a glass eye, like originally, and that's why they hired Peter Falk, or did they give Columbo a glass eye because of Peter Falk?
I think yes. The latter.
I'm not sure. I think it adds to Columbo's intrigue that he has a glass eye.
Who slayed more?
Pussy.
Yeah, Columbo or Lovejoy?
Lovejoy, because Columbo is married and he mentions his wife all the way throughout and it's very sweet.
Well, he was missing out on a great opportunity. I wonder, do you think Peter Falk ended up getting a lot of ass?
Fuck yeah. Peter Falk, Ben Gazzara, and John Cassavetes were the drunkest men in Hollywood, and they slayed. I would have had sex with all three of them. I would have been the lucky Pierre.
So anyway, we kind of took some photos today to recreate a famous, photo shoot that Ian McShane or Lovejoy was doing. Ian McShane was doing as Lovejoy.
Yeah, it was just silly. But I'm bloated. I'm about to get my period. I'm just feeling like fat. I've been working out so much as well.
So, Kate Rambo.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on from that because I think you're being too hard on yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're too hard on yourself.
I'm going to
move on
from
that. But speaking of detectives, private investigators, and things like that, have you ever snitched on anyone? Have you ever, like, called the police to report someone?
No, I've never called the police to report. I've never felt the need to call the police. Like, if I was in the Limmy sketch where, like, my neighbors wouldn't let me join in a party, then I would for sure ring the police. But usually I'm of the mind. It's like, I just don't want the drama. I don't want the hassle. I don't want
to
that type
deal
of
with
stuff.
It? Yeah. But you've never done it just to fuck with somebody? Like, I'm not talking, I've never, like, swatted someone. I would never do that.
No, like, dox someone. Although I do have a Scorpio stellium, my revenge is usually more of a mental revenge, as Waylon Jennings sings, sweet mental revenge, rather than actual stuff like that.
Well, what about, like, on a, you know, not even just calling the police, but, like, what about reporting someone, like your company? Like, if your company that you work for is doing something evil, have you ever actually reported them to, like, the media?
Always. Like, I've had the thoughts about doing it. But again, it's like one of those things. It's like if you're going to go into litigation with your company, you can't be working for your company. So you're going to have to go and find another job. And then same to your next job that you're currently going for litigation with your old company because you're whistleblowing. Yeah, it's like, it's bad. But have I bitched to HR about stuff all the fucking time?
Yeah, but bitched about, you know, shitty policies that the company had, or bitched about like a problem you have another employee?
You know, I wished I'd done. So for those who don't know, I used to work in Sainsbury's, and one time in Sainsbury's, they hadn't provided me with the correct PPE, your personal protection equipment, as in they hadn't given me gloves because the entire store was out of gloves, which they can be done for anyways if they get audited and there's no gloves. Well, I ended up cutting myself on like a glass jar, and I had to go to the hospital, and I had 2 stitches. And do you know what I got from Sainsbury's?
What?
Nothing.
Oh, they didn't even give you any money?
But I could have gone into...
You could have got workman's comp.
Yeah, I could have gone into litigation with them and been like, you've scarred me for life. I have a scar because of you. You didn't. It's because you didn't provide me with the correct PPE, which you didn't have in store, which like as a company. And also, to whistleblow on Sainsbury's a little as well, there was a big period throughout a summer where they didn't have any drinking water for the staff, which is against, like, they shouldn't have even been open.
I mean, that's something you could snitch on,
but they're like little shitty things where I've never had like enough insider. Oh, actually, two of the managers inside of Sainsbury's Carlisle, the big Sainsbury's in Sainsbury's Carlisle, I'm pointing out there, two of the managers had sex in the disabled toilet upstairs, and it's all, I've not seen the footage of them shagging, like I'm not a pervert, but I've seen the footage where they go in to the toilet, and then 7 minutes later, because they were only there 7 minutes, they come out and they're all giggly, and she's touching his cock, and guess what happened to them?
Probably nothing, although they might have been scolded by a person with like cerebral palsy who was waiting to use the bathroom.
No, all they got was suspended for 2 weeks with full pay. That's it.
Yeah, but what are you going to
work for Sainsbury's Carlisle?
Are they going to really do anything about that?
Well, I mean, the executives are oil sheiks who own Sainsbury's. They don't give a shit who's having sex. But there you go. That when your managers are allowed to get away with having sex in the toilet and everyone knew about it, we would all make jokes about these two managers in Sainsbury's Carlisle, the big Sainsbury's in Carlisle. Two managers go in and ask if you're in the area.
You know,
thank you. I'm whistleblowing now.
Yeah, when I remember one time when I was living, it was my first apartment when I moved to San Francisco. This would have been like late 90s. I ended up living on Treasure Island with P-Town. This is before even Wackley moved there. And then my girlfriend hated living in a house with a bunch of dudes. So we ended up getting our own apartment, kind of in the Mission area of San Francisco, right off of Jesse Street. People who know that area, there used to be a sex club out there called the Power Exchange. Oh, we were like right across the street. It's a great, great place. You could sit on our porch and just kind of look at mostly it was trans prostitutes going in there. I don't think I ever saw a biological female go in there. But
not
it
even
was
for
a sex
drink?
Club.
Not even for like a cheeky cocktail at the end of the night?
I don't even know if they had a bar. They must have
had
a bar.
Oh, it was that? Okay.
Yeah, it was like a swingers club.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, we lived in this kind of like shitty one-bedroom apartment on top of like another one-bedroom apartment. And that apartment below us was rented by a bunch of migrant workers that came like, definitely illegal, but they would come like every summer to go work in like the Napa Valley,
right,
and other jobs throughout the Mission. But anyway, in a one bedroom apartment, I would say there are probably about 15 people living there, almost all dudes.
Oh yeah,
because they would just, it was, you know, I don't know if one person had the lease or how it worked exactly, but there were like 15 guys living there. And when it was like a government holiday, it was like a Mexican party. Like, and they would party, like they would have like 10 cases of Tecate. And at one point, at like 3 in the morning, there'd be a tuba out and be like, boom, boom, boom. And everybody would be wasted and fighting.
And nobody invited you? Because I would, this is like Limmy, where I'd be like, I want to be invited to this party. But then if they didn't invite me in, that's when I'd be like, I'm calling the cops on you.
You know, they didn't really communicate with us. Not, they didn't really speak English. A couple of them did speak English, but they weren't really friendly. I mean, I would wave. I wasn't rude, but I mean, that we didn't really associate.
I know, but I want to go and hear the tuba. Like,
well, we did hear the fucking tuba. Like, it was so fucking loud, and the walls at that place were paper thin. But anyway, the reason I used a governmental agency as a form of revenge, I had a green Monte Carlo at the time. It used to belong to the rabbi. The rabbi would always say the temple would lease him vehicles, and when he'd get a new vehicle, he would end up usually buying it off the lease, giving it to give it to my mother. Or then I remember he gave this car when I graduated college. I thought I was going to get a car. I didn't get a car. I basically got to take over the lease on this fucking car. So I still had to spend, like, pay $18,000.
Was it not a cool car, though? We don't have Monte Carlos.
It's like a 95 Monte Carlo. It wasn't the cool years of the Monte Carlo, but it was a nice car. It was a nice car. Drove it out to San Francisco. But it was like kind of a dark forest green, sort of.
Okay.
Anyway, I parked in front of my house, in front of this this apartment, and it was after work, and I didn't even drive to work, so my car would stay there for, you know, for a few days on end before I'd move it to the other side because of street cleaning. But I remember coming back home, and you'd see the Mexican dudes. They always had like these pieces of shit cars in various states of construction. Like, some of them were missing wheels. They're always working on it. They were painting them. They're always. And so one time I was walking home, and I saw them just painting, like, with white paint, like paint you'd paint a wall with.
Oh God.
Not even like real car paint.
Yeah.
And they were just painting this piece of shit with white paint. And I remember being like, they better not get that fucking shit on my car. I'm going to be pissed. But I was like, whatever. So anyway, go upstairs, sitting around. The next day, the next morning, I'm getting up for work. I walk out. These motherfuckers took that can of shitty paint and put it on my trunk. And the paint just dripped down the trunk, down the whole side of my down the whole right side of my car, but also the whole back side of the trunk. And it was obvious it was them.
Could you use, like, I'm obviously not, like, I don't know, like, car paint that well, but would it not just come off with some white spirit and it wouldn't affect the car paint?
No, it was paint.
Yeah, but I mean, get it off with some white spirit and it wouldn't affect the car paint.
No, what I ended up doing is I got some, like, turpentine or paint remover, but it did kind of fuck up my paint.
Right, so it did.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, anyway, there was paint down my car. So I was fucking furious. So on my way to work, I go and knock on their door and I was just like, you know, open up the door. I was like, hey, you know, one of you guys painted the back of my car. Like, what the fuck? And the guy, I didn't even swear in the beginning. I was like, excuse me, I think one of you guys, I saw you guys paint a car, and you painted, you left the paint on my trunk, and it dripped down the back of my car. And the guys were like, no English. Like,
¿Qué?
Just kind of looking at me. I was like, dude, I know you can speak English, I've heard you. But anyway, I was like, Blanco Pinto on the crochet. I was
whiter.
Like, somebody did this. No, I don't know. I think I was just like, you know, mi crochet. It's like, es allí, Blanco Paint, whatever paint, because I can kind of speak Spanish. And I was just like, who did it? He's like, no, I don't know. I was like, I know it was fucking you. Because I was just like, you guys are painting these two cars white, and I saw you paint it. One of you guys painted the back of my car. And then the one guy was like, no, man, it wasn't me, I say. And then his buddy got up, and then his two other buddies, and they're all kind of like, we got a problem, man? We got a problem? And I was just like,
no problem here,
boys. You
guys
can't paint my fucking car. I mean, he was just like, we said we didn't paint your fucking car. And they were kind of like getting in my face, and I was like, all right. Two can play this game. And so I left and I called fucking ICE. Yeah, immigration. And I was just like, hey, I think there's a drug cartel underneath my house. I was like, I don't know, there's like 15 dudes living there. They're painting all these cars.
There's gentlemen
drugs
arriving.
Going back and forth. All of them got deported.
Oh my God. Do you, like, some of those men you have probably killed, if you think
probably,
about it.
I don't know. I mean, they probably came back.
No, I bet some of them maybe went back and, like, the cartel who was waiting for them was like, oh, it looks like
Jose's
back. Are
you saying
every
Mexican guy is part of a cartel?
No, but I'm saying...
This is also, like, 2000. I don't even know if it was as big of a deal then.
Yeah, cartels have always
been a big deal. But they're definitely here illegally. And then I also fucked over my shitty landlord because then they had to, like,
Oh, yeah, obviously.
They're burning it out to actually kind of a cool couple.
Oh, so all so well,
it worked out in the end, except for the paint on my fucking car. But anyway, I didn't really feel like I was a snitch as much as getting revenge. But maybe I was a bit of a snitch. But snitching is quite a bit different than whistleblowing.
Completely different.
So this past week, you might have heard about the Boeing quality control manager, John Barnett, who died very suspiciously. He was a whistleblower who just went public with his concerns about serious safety issues with the Boeing commercial jets, which we just traveled to San Francisco, although we flew Southwest, but a lot of those planes are Boeing.
But yeah, it was a Boeing plane.
Yeah, I don't think it was the Boeing 737 or 787.
No, it was the 737 we were
Yeah, on. But I didn't tell Kate about this because I didn't want you getting nervous until we came back.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, because I would have been the type of person who's like, no, we're getting the bus. That's it.
But John Barnett recently went public with his concerns and was about to give testimony in this retaliation case against Boeing. But his body was mysteriously found in a vehicle in a Holiday Inn parking lot in Charleston, South Carolina, Saturday, March 9th. He had supposedly committed suicide.
I can't think of like just a more depressing death than being in, what type of car was he in? Holiday Inn
parking lot?
A Holiday Inn parking lot, probably in a Honda Civic. Like, yeah, just in fucking Charleston.
Well, woo-hoo. He worked for Boeing for quite a few years. And he recently testified in a deposition related to a string of problems. Safety problems, mostly, and quality control issues with these Boeing 787 aircrafts that have been very problematic recently.
Yeah.
And he was about to give, I guess, in a month or so, a deposition on his in this retaliation case against Boeing, but then he was found dead.
How had he died? How had he expired?
He shot himself in the head.
Yeah, but anyone can shoot you in the head and make it look like you've shot yourself in the head.
It's very suspicious, and they're currently investigating it. So we'll see. But you know what though? He's not the only whistleblower who died under suspicious circumstances. Now, just to define the term whistleblower is kind of a snitch, but not really a snitch. It's a snitch for
corporate reasons.
Good reasons, you know? I mean, it's like justifiable snitching, I guess you could say. But a whistleblower is typically an employee of an organization or government, a governmental employee, who reports abuse, fraud, corruption, and other dangers to public health and safety. They often turn to public reporting when their attempts to report internally fail. And right. I guess that's what happened in this Boeing case. Like, he had reported this to his superiors at Boeing, who just turned a blind eye.
Well, maybe I should report it to the Sun that two managers inside of the big car at Sainsbury's in Carlisle had sex inside of the two managers had sex in the disabled toilets. And we all knew about it and we would all make
but
jokes.
I don't think
it.
That's
in the big car at Sainsbury's Carlisle.
I don't think that's
Carlisle.
As big of a deal. I don't think they care that much.
It's very scandalous.
They were also, punished for it. So, but I don't think that's not like whistleblowing, like, you know, they're putting lead in the coffee.
How is being suspended for 2 weeks on full pay any form of punishment?
Well, they're suspended.
With full pay for 2 weeks.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying.
They got 2 weeks holiday.
But that's not to the degree of whistleblowing.
I'm whistleblowing that inside of the big Sainsbury's in Carlisle, two managers had sex in the disabled toilet.
Exactly. It's more like gossip.
Well, it's not gossip because they really did it. And also, they used a disabled person's toilet for not disabled people's means.
I guess, but I don't think it really
matters. I'm whistleblowing on the two managers. I'm holding back myself from naming them.
Now, the term whistleblower came into common usage until kind of around about the 1970s, but people have obviously been reporting abuse, as long as people worked at companies. A couple famous whistleblowers you might have heard of. Mark Felt.
Who's Mark Felt?
Deep Throat.
Oh, I was about to say, the first one that came to mind was like when you said that whistleblowing became popular in the 70s. I was like, because of Watergate.
Yeah, for more than 30 years, people wondered about the identity of Deep Throat, who is a secret informant to Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, who broke the Watergate scandal. And he actually came in 2005. I think Felt was dead by that point, but they revealed his identity in 2005. He was the associate director of the FBI.
That's a bit shit if it's like, we'll just wait for him to die and then we'll finger him to the press.
I don't know if they had like a contract or exactly what precipitated them revealing his identity. But that was like, I mean, that was a major whistleblower. It led to the president's resignation.
It did.
And prison terms for two top Nixon officials. Daniel Ellsberg, another famous governmental whistleblower. He was a military analyst who leaked the Pentagon Papers, which is a secret account of the Vietnam War. He leaked it to the New York Times in 1971. And these papers demonstrated that the Johnson administration had lied to the public and Congress about what was actually going on in Vietnam.
Yeah, they lied that none of the helicopters had CCR's Fortunate Son wired into them so that when the rotor blade started going...
I thought it was Wagner.
No, I'm going with CCR Fortunate Son now.
A couple of recent, very notorious and famous whistleblowers, Julian Assange. He's kind of the figurehead, I guess, of WikiLeaks, which was launched in 2006, and they exposed government secrets worldwide. Most notably, the explosive leak of the U.S. military and diplomatic files related to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Julian has spent over a decade either in custody or kind of trapped, I guess you could say, in Ecuador's London embassy, trying to avoid extradition first to Sweden for allegations of rape and then to the U.S.
Can I say good? Because he's definitely a rapist. So, yeah. Hide all you want, Julian.
Those charges were dropped.
By the woman.
Well, there are two women that were accusing him.
There you go. He's a dick.
Yeah, but how many women have accused Trump?
Because Trump has definitely done it as well. Come on.
Do you remember when Pamela Anderson was bringing him lunch and going to Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy?
Would you have a little feel of Pammy if she was bringing you lunch?
Well, everyone was saying that he's probably shagging her, at least getting a handy. But she kind of looks like a plastic surgery disaster now.
I think she's still very bonny, but I wouldn't be like, she's a bit, she's okay.
But
like,
the funny thing is, when Assange finally left or got kicked out of the Ecuadorian embassy, they were like, oh yeah, this place is a fucking pigsty.
I remember.
Like shit all over the toilet seat.
Oh, Julian.
He's like, like cigarette butts everywhere. Like, yeah, the guy doesn't even have practice proper hygiene. Chelsea Manning is another... recent whistleblower. In 2010, she was a U.S. Army intelligence analyst. She released the largest set of classified documents in U.S. history that were published by Assange and WikiLeaks.
Never trust a woman.
Yeah. Well, Chelsea Manning at that time was a man. But in 2013, she came out as publicly as a trans woman and then began her transition while incarcerated. But you know what's interesting? She was sentenced to 35 years in prison for violating the Espionage Act, but was granted clemency by Obama.
Okay.
During the final days of his presidency.
He was like, let it out.
I mean, she released some shocking and explosive information that did lead to reform in some ways. But anyway, since her release from prison, she is an advocate of freedom of information and transgender rights. A couple more. Edward Snowden.
He's most famous, I would say.
Another governmental employee who released documents on top secret NSA programs to reporters at The Guardian and The Washington Post. He also blew the whistle publicly on the NSA, which sparked a debate about privacy and national security.
I'm also surprised he is still alive, because we had to Google it because I was convinced he was dead.
Well, you know, it's interesting because he went to exile. He was charged with violating the Espionage Act, but he sought asylum in Russia before he was apprehended. And they were cool about it.
Of course.
And then he continues to reside there. They made him a citizen.
I think Putin was like, the enemy of the enemy is my friend. Welcome, Edu. You live here now with us.
Another famous case here, Frank Serpico.
Yeah, Serpico.
Great movie with Al Pacino.
Right, I love that movie, and I didn't know that it was based on a real thing. I just thought it was an Al Pacino. I don't think it even says at the start, the following is based on a true movie, does it?
Famous case, yeah. There's a book about it. It's based on the book.
Well, I've never read the book, clearly. I just thought it's Al Pacino as Serpico.
He was Frank Serpico was the first police officer in history to openly testify about corruption in the New York City Police Department. He worked as a plainclothes detective through the 60s and 70s. And in 67, he reported police corruption, including bribes, payoffs, but to no avail. Although, after he went to the New York Times and they published this story, that led to the formation of the Knapp Commission and, you know, internal affairs.
Okay.
So, but in 1971, you know, he survived a shot in the face during an arrest in Brooklyn.
I did know that about Serpico.
There's never a formal investigation, but it could very be, suspicious could the circumstances be surrounding the shooting.
As people, an aside.
Well, people say it was his colleagues trying to get revenge.
Just quickly before we move on, what's your favorite Al Pacino movie? I have affinity for...
I love Carlito's Way.
I do. Like, you know what? The last time I watched Carlito's Way, I did think it was a kind of boring. But
I like that one. And obviously Scarface.
Cruising.
Oh, yeah. Cruising is a good movie.
I think we can all be in agreement that Scarface is one of the greatest films ever made.
Cruising is a good movie.
And Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh, that's a great one, too. Yeah.
I really like both those movies.
1993, Erin Brockovich.
Oh, yeah.
Famous whistleblower. Julia Roberts portrayed her in that film around, what, like 2000, I think it came out?
2004?
But she spoke out against PG&E after finding widespread unexplained illness in the town of Hinckley, California.
I would also like to point out that in the movie is one of my all-time favorite actors, Albert Finney. He's so handsome.
Oh, yeah. It's a good movie. As well as America's first nuclear whistleblower, Karen Silkwood, who discovered numerous health violations at the Kerr-McGee Nuclear Power Plant in Crescent, Oklahoma. We're going to be talking about that shortly. And we're going to talk about another corporate whistleblower, John Clifford Baxter, an Enron executive, that when the company's massive criminal activities were discovered, he challenged Enron's management team, and including the CEO at the time, Jeff Skilling, about the company's corrupt transactions, and he resigned in protest. And he was about to testify in a major trial, but he was also found dead in his car by a gunshot wound, self-inflicted.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, it is interesting. I mean, I think whistleblowers definitely have, you know, forcibly brought on a lot of change, you know, in government institutions as well as corporations. But a lot of whistleblowers had lives who ended violently and mysteriously before they were able to actually testify about scandals and corruption. Some of them just completely disappeared. So we're going to get into that on this week's show. But before, let's chat about something a bit more disgraceful than a ruthless aircraft manufacturer covering up the mechanical failures of their products.
Something else that you can blow.
Let's chat about weekly podcast listeners who refuse to support their favorite podcraft on Patreon.
Oh, you're going after the freeloaders.
That's what I'm saying. That's scandalous. If you look forward to listening to this mind-expanding program every Monday, if that's your thing, you know, Monday morning, you get sick and wrong and a cup of coffee, and you look forward to it, and it gives you some sense of purpose, then all we ask is for you to sign up for the Sick and Wrong Patreon or Apple Podcasts and do your part to support the show. We do really appreciate it. It's only $5 a month. That's it. And you get access to Sick and Wrong Second Show. We do a complete second show every week. And this week, it's going to be a roundup of our trip to San Francisco or the Bay Area, actually, because now we're going to Oakland. For Ozzy's birthday. But we did get to spend some quality time with Wackerly.
Yeah, we asked Wackerly to say the word disgusting as well.
We did, and I got that on tape. You know, I might start the show with that, actually.
You should.
Yeah, he got really drunk. He was trying. He was so drunk that he spent like a good 10 minutes trying to find a picture of this Lego pyramid that he built. Yeah, the Lego pyramid of Giza. We also, hung out with a lot of children. Kate had to deal with a lot of kids this time around.
Wasn't as bad as I was anticipating it.
And we gave Ozzy, I would say, like a splendid array of fart-related gifts.
He's in his fart era.
He's in his fart era. He loves farts. I hope it never stops.
I don't think it will.
Yeah, much to my sister's disappointment, we gave him like a number of very loud fart gifts, and he loved it. Is very happy. We talk about all that on the second show. So $5 a month, get access to Sick and Wrong Second Show. You also get access to the Sick and Wrong Discord. There's some amazing pictures on there, not to mention some of the grossest porn I think I've ever seen.
Are you going to put up the video of me and Chi-Chi?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I forgot about that. I'm definitely going to post that to Discord. I have on video Chi-Chi. This is the past like three nights in a row. Chi-Chi humping, like raping Kate's arm.
Well, it's not raping because I'm
I guess you're,
him.
Yeah. I mean, you're moving your arm back
and
forth.
I'm not moving my arm.
Vigorously.
I'm not doing that.
Not to mention occasionally like using your fingers to kind of give him a little more friction and pleasure.
I'm also not doing that.
It's on tape and I'm posting it to the Discord. I recorded it in like three parts because afterwards he gets off of her arm, dismounts, and then licks his genitals for about 10 minutes.
He does. That's what he does.
Yeah. It's gross. It's gross and it's unnatural. It's bestiality and it occurs in my house. I'll be posting that to the Discord for sure. And then we also post a show to Apple Podcasts. So you don't even need to deal with Patreon if you don't want to. A couple different ways to support the show. Patreon.com/sickandwrong. We do appreciate the support. So let me play this quick promo and then let's get into the shady and very suspicious deaths of several corporate whistleblowers. Hey, Sick and Wrong listeners. If you're not currently a Sick and Wrong patron, you might be missing out on special moments like this one.
So before you've actually penetrated her with your Johnson, you're going to just rub the tip, the head, the glands of your shaft around her outer labia and over her clitoris. And you're just going to tease her by saying things like, oh, I don't even know if I should even put it in today. I don't even know if you deserve
put it in today. Like what? I'm a fucking microwave.
Just teasing up like that and then.
Wait. So you're supposed to rub your dick up and down her pussy and on her clit be like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to put this in. I don't know.
Today.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe if you play your cards right, Missy, you might get this cock inside of you, okay? But for now, I'm just going to rub it on the outside, all right?
Oh, my God. This guy.
How annoyed would you be?
I'd just be like, put it in today. I'd be like, oh, well, shoot me an email when you're ready to put it in.
For only $5 a month, you can enjoy these special moments. A bonus news story, extra phone calls, and an hour's worth of outtakes every week at patreon.com/sickandwrong. Sign up today. Support the show. And keep it sick and wrong. Don't you ever think of me. How familiar are you with all the ongoing airplane fiasco with Boeing?
I go through little phases with where I'll spend a large portion of my YouTube life watching air crash videos and stuff like that. But at the minute, I'm not into it, so I don't really care.
But are you aware of what's going on with all these Boeing planes?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They're all like malfunctioning and falling out the sky and stuff.
So January 5th, a door panel blew off a Boeing 737 MAX 9 jet during a flight from Oregon to California.
A 737, that's what we were on.
That's exactly what we were on. The plane, which was operated by Alaska Airlines, which I seldom fly.
Why? Is it just dire?
Mostly because they just charge ridiculous fees for checked baggage. When an airline doesn't allow you to bring, not checked baggage, carry-on baggage. If an airline doesn't allow me to bring a carry-on with me, I won't fly that airline.
Here's the question, though. So, obviously, air travel is the safest of all the travel, just like because it is, because there's less accidents. Would you rather travel in like a Cessna?
No.
You wouldn't go in like a Cessna, like a rich person, like a Kardashian, like what, the Lisa Marie?
At least these Boeings are flown by what I assume are professionals who are trained in it. Not just not some entitled fuck.
No, even most of them are retired pilots who go in, the amount of money you can make being a
private
pilot
is insane. A lot of people are private
people
who fly Cessnas. I've had two opportunities to go in a private individual Cessna who is trained, but not trained like a pilot.
They
are
pilots.
Who's probably in the Air Force.
No, a lot of them are retired.
No, this twat that I knew was just a rich kid. And
well,
he had his own Cessna. And I refused.
Yeah, I wouldn't
get I'm not going to do that.
JFK Jr.'s plane.
Fuck no, I'm not going to do that. But this particular 739 or 737 MAX 9, I was missing like four key bolts in the door.
Where have they gone?
I don't know. I mean, quality control just failed here. And the CEO of United Airlines threatened to shut down Boeing's carrier's fleet of MAX 9 aircraft. Because he was going to ground, like they were grounded after this Alaska Airlines door blowout.
Did anybody get sucked out?
No, but people were freaking out. There's video of it.
I always thought that if you lost cabin pressure, like you'd all die because there'd be no oxygen.
No, you get the oxygen things. I think they did like manage to pull the door closed again. But I mean, you know.
Terrifying.
Yeah. People were warning that a blowout like this can easily happen again. Because there's a problem with the process of production at these different plants.
Right.
And then a week after that, another Boeing plane was forced to make an emergency landing in Japan due to a crack in the cockpit window that wasn't caught.
Here's my other question, though. Is Boeing not like, is it not like the Ford of the skies? Like, it's just, there's only five different types of plane manufacturers, and Boeing is the most popular.
Boeing's the primary one. I think Boeing's been making planes for everybody for decades.
Yeah, so it's no surprises that there's going to be stuff like this.
Well, the surprise is that there's not... You know, that there's not acceptable quality control at these plants. Like, this is four bolts in the door. That should have been caught.
But how old is that plane? How many miles had it done?
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't matter. It's like they should be doing safety checks on all of these planes to make sure that they're, you know, able to fly.
I know they do after a certain amount of miles. And at the end...
It's not even mileage. It should be like periodical checks. I would say at least weekly on all these planes. Not to mention... I'm sometimes really concerned when you get these planes from like Alaska or Southwest. They're usually planes from other airlines,
and they slap.
Yeah, you know, they rebrand it and everything, and they're older aircraft. But you know, this plane will land, and you get 30 minutes to do a quick little mechanical check, and then back up in the air. That freaks me out.
I like the fact you think it's all just people controlling it. You know, it's like a computer. All the planes now are computerized. So it's not just a person.
They have manual checks.
Of course. And they let everyone know. There's not a moment where a plane is like solitary. Like there's so many people watching that plane.
Less than a month ago, a Boeing 757 lost its front tire as the aircraft was preparing to depart for an international flight in Bogota, Colombia.
Did people die then? Because no, that's dangerous.
No one died, but I mean, they had to like do an emergency landing. And then shortly after that, a UK passenger was alarmed after noticing pieces of tape on the exterior of a Boeing 787 during a flight to India. Could you imagine being in your chair, you look out the window and you see tape holding the wing together?
I'd be like, well, we are going to India. Makes sense.
A United Airlines Boeing 777 aircraft suffered a mid-air fuel leak and had to make an emergency landing on Monday, March 11th. This is the fifth incident.
This is why everyone should do what I do when you get on a plane. Make sure you're a little bit over half cut so that when the booze starts wearing off, you're just going down a bit. It's not like you're half cut and then you become sober again. You want to be on the road to tipsy getting on a plane.
Well, so maybe you can pass out and not realize that the wing is just duct taped together.
Yeah.
You know, even Ryanair, probably one of the worst airlines in history, Michael O'Leary said he's made loud complaints to Boeing over quality control.
They're all going to be like this, going, we told you, Boeing. We told you. Never mind our planes.
So whistleblower John Barnett raised safety concerns at the airline's factory. And he provided his testimony at a bombshell lawsuit against Boeing. And he was found dead in his truck after he failed to show up for the second part of his testimony.
He had a truck then, not a Honda Civic. I take it back.
Boeing workers warned that Barnett made powerful enemies before his quote-unquote suicide. But he was found dead in his pickup truck in a Holiday Inn parking lot on March 9th in Charleston, South Carolina. And that same morning... He was due to conclude his private testimony in this retaliation lawsuit against Boeing. So he was actually, he extended his stay until March 8th at this hotel, and he was caught on surveillance video leaving the hotel that morning. Police also noted that Barnett's driver's license, was still in the room when he was found with a gunshot wound to the head and a pistol still in his hand the following morning in his truck.
That happens, though. You can still have the gun still in your hand.
It's kind of rare, though. Typically, when you shoot yourself, you drop the pistol.
Oh, but what type of pistol is this? What, like, how much of a grip did he have on it? And, like, he doesn't have to take his ID with him every... I don't take ID
with
me.
Well, no, it's kind of weird that if you're leaving your hotel, you don't have your driver's license on you. You're driving a car. He's driving this car.
Maybe he was going to kill himself, though.
I know, it's odd. The alarm had been raised by his lawyers because they couldn't reach him on the phone. They requested a welfare check, and a hotel staff member found his body in the truck. And yeah, they found him with a gunshot wound to his head, his hand still clutching the pistols. Employees at the Boeing plant where he had worked until retiring in 2017 said that they're all freaked out about this because they know him and they knew him very well. I mean, they worked with him for 30 years, and they're very skeptical about this death of his, especially because they're calling it a suicide. One of his coworkers said anonymously, "It gives me a pit in my stomach because of what he's been saying, and he's dead now. I find it hard to believe that he killed himself. But I don't really know what to believe. We don't really talk about it on the line. We're on camera from the minute we get onto the property, and they can hear us. So no one wants to talk about it at work."
Oh, there would be no stopping the gossip in the big Sainsbury's in Carlisle if something like that had happened, if a manager had found himself dead. If one of the managers, I'm not saying her name, but it rhymes with Machel, had been found outside dead in a car because she'd had sex in the disabled toilet at the big Sainsbury's. Do you know how much we'd have all been gossiping and making evil jokes about all of us?
I would be concerned if, because maybe they would just get rid of you if you're going to be a nuisance.
Oh, yeah, what they're going to do, like lay me off for 2 weeks on full pay because I was gossiping about
managers? Or maybe
they'll
just fire you because you're talking shit about other employees and managers. That's what I would do. If I was an executive, I'd be like, these people are rabble-rousers. Just get rid of them.
I think you should be allowed to talk about something like this on your line with your mates.
I don't know if you should do it on the line. I would be nervous about... I mean, I wouldn't criticize the company with an earshot of anyone that could have consequences for me. But that's why another Boeing employee said, "Nothing surprises me when it comes to Boeing. It's a good job, but you have to stay in line. If you don't, you won't work here anymore."
Maybe they're just going to be like, "I know a way to solve this problem. Hey, just leave out some bolts. Next time you're making a door, just leave some bolts out. We'll get our revenge."
to this employee? Or to the people flying unsuspecting passengers?
I'd be like, "Come on, lads, at lunchtime." I'd be like, "We'll just leave some bolts out." They'll never know because they don't check.
And then they'll hear you, and then they'll arrest you for attempted murder, but then they'll fire you because of sabotage.
I'd be like, I was talking about the truck I'm building with my mates from the line.
Boeing said, "We're saddened by Mr. Barnett's passing. Saddened. Our thoughts are with his family and friends."
Yes, saddened.
You know, so an employee who works at the Holiday Inn said they spoke to him the night before, and they said that, the night before he had eaten a quesadilla, he drank a Coke, he was scrolling on his phone, he seemed fine. I didn't think of him at all until I heard the news the next day. He didn't seem upset or depressed to me.
But most suicides don't. Most suicides get all their ducks in a row and they're pretty fucking happy because they know the pain is going to end soon.
Well, it's strange, the timing of all this.
It is very strange, yeah.
And he'd worked there for 3 decades before he retired in 2017.
That just doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, but 2 years after he retired, he told BBC that Boeing cut corners by rushing to get its 787 Dreamliner jets off the production line. And he gave numerous interviews saying how he complained internally to the company about what he claimed were serious safety flaws that he had detected. But the company took no action, and they just said that they didn't want to talk about this out of concern for people's safety. Which seems a bit hypocritical there.
Yeah. Are they just waiting for an actual plane to fall out the sky and take out like a kind of street block, like Lockerbie? The revenge.
I mean, 5 separate incidents, like in the span of what, 3 months?
Yeah. That's different scary. Planes, though, wasn't it? It was all like different planes.
Two of them were the, 737s and then this 787. So Barnett's lawyers are challenging that he committed suicide, and they're calling for a thorough investigation. They want the Charleston police to investigate this fully and tell the public because they don't see any indication that he had taken his own life. No one can believe it. His family and friends are all shocked. Steve Chancellor, who wrote 2 books on stage crime scenes, he said that when somebody dies by suicide, the gun only remains in a person's hand 25% of the time.
That's still 25% is 1/4. That's like quite a lot.
He said that's something I'd pay attention to.
But, yeah, and they're going to obviously swap his hands and find...
Well, you said when people are trying to make a death look like a suicide, that's the first mistake that they do.
What, put a gun in the hand?
Put the gun in the hand, yeah.
But he's in a very enclosed space, like a truck. Like, I imagine it's just like a little, what, a Ford truck, a two-seater up front. So it's not like his arm has a room.
But can't they figure
in.
It out, though? Like, if, I guess, by the way he's holding it.
Yeah, imagine the FBI, who are much smarter than you are.
But I'm sure they're going
to
look into
figure it.
It
out. Yeah.
But I'm sure they're going to, I mean, that's a clue. They also said there was a white piece of paper that resembled a note on the passenger seat.
A suicide
note. But its contents have not been disclosed.
I'm kind of leaning towards suicide at the minute.
I don't see why this guy would commit suicide.
I see why.
Why?
Because it's what he's whistleblowing is like one of the most stressful things you can do. He's probably been super stressed for years over this, and now it's coming to the end of the road where his usefulness will no longer be of, he'll no longer be of any use anymore.
How?
Because this he's guy, about to finish guy, his testimony.
Yeah, but this guy's got the rest of his life. He's retired. He can
he's
write
got no
books.
Use.
He can write books about this. He's probably saved countless lives. I mean, I don't see...
Possibly.
I don't see that there's any reason he would commit suicide. But the other thing that's kind of interesting is, if they're going to take him out, why would they wait till he's, like, till after he's given his first set of testimony?
And also, I think if you were going to take him out, I would disappear him completely. I would, well, that, I would Jimmy Hoffa him.
That happens oftentimes, but maybe they just made it look like a suicide because it'd be easy.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't put it past Boeing to try to make this guy go away. And who knows, maybe what came out of his first testimony was so damning that they're like, we got to stop this before he does it again.
Maybe. Or maybe he didn't have much. And that's why.
I don't think there would be two sets of testimony if he didn't have much.
They could have been.
And even his lawyers. I don't know. I think it's very suspicious, but I guess we'll find out. But speaking of another corporate whistleblower, a famous case that you're about to discuss here is Karen Silkwood.
On the evening of November the 13th, 1974, Karen Silkwood, she's a 28-year-old laboratory assistant. She leaves a union meeting near her work in an Oklahoma plutonium plant, and she's making a 30-mile drive to Oklahoma City. You know, she's a good driver, and she's traveling alone. She's on a very important mission, though. She's to deliver an she's delivered to an official from her union's national headquarters documented evidence of radiation leaks and other hazardous practices in her workplace. So this is a plutonium recycling plant operated by the Kerr-McGee Corporation.
Where was it?
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma.
She had gathered the evidence secretly, but in a rather amateurish way, and this had aroused the suspicion of her employers, and she was last seen minutes before she started on her journey, carrying a very suspicious manila folder full of what she said was evidence, right? She never reaches her destination. For some reason, her car veered off a lonely road, and it plunges into a deep culvert. She's killed instantly, and they say the manila folder was never found.
Well, that's interesting. So she had this evidence that was never backed up. That's the thing now, because now we have computers. So now we can be like, it's in the cloud. I have a friend who will release it upon the news of my death.
Yeah. I would love to do something like that and be like, I have a safety deposit box, and should I die? Like Nicole Brown Simpson.
Yeah. Well,
should,
like,
something happen to me, he
what's
did
your insurance?
It. Yeah. So police at the time ruled her death accidental, but experts from her union who examined her battered car, they say that some of its damage was consistent with it being rammed from behind by a heavier vehicle. And a postmortem showed that she had low levels of alcohol in her body, but she did have a tranquilizing drug in her body, suggesting that there might have been another possible cause of death.
But could they have not, you know, a murderer, couldn't they have just given her this barbiturate?
Yeah, like what the Manson family did with Diane, just put a bunch of acid in a hamburger and watch her trip out.
But couldn't you tell, though, by the back of her car, like, was it smashed?
We will get into, like, the forensic evidence in a bit. So they say that Karen's either a martyr amongst whistleblowers and nuclear safety activists, which is kind of ironic because Karen Silkwood is the type of person whom anti-nuclear groups would have totally disliked. So she worked in a nuclear plant. She was totally into nuclear energy. It was only the working conditions that she hated. Or according to her employers, she's an absolute mentalist who was taking home plutonium from her workplace and she was using it like butter on her bologna sandwiches.
Okay, well, maybe. I'd like to see them prove that.
So I think Karen is probably one of the most famous of all the dead whistleblowers. When we were talking about doing this episode, I was like, oh my God, Karen Silkwood. And she's not just famous for her very 60s helmet hair or her flirty. She had a really flirty, like bubblegum blowing, like nature at work when she was the lab technician at the, oh, it's in Crescent, Oklahoma, for people who are in the area. She became concerned when she, with what she saw as quality control failures and very lax safety procedures after she was riddled with plutonium, like it was fallout and she was in the wasteland. She was repeatedly contaminated with plutonium, but no one knew where it was coming from. A monitoring device had first discovered flecks of plutonium on her skin and clothing shortly after she arrived for work on November the 5th, 1974. So she showered us off. Well, that's the standard technique. It's still the standard technique today. And she just goes to work. The next day, the monitor flashed again. And on the third day, a nasal smear confirmed that she was infected internally.
Well, what does she work? Like for Montgomery Burns' nuclear power plant? Like, yeah. Is there just plutonium just dripping everywhere?
Clearly. Karen's obviously freaked out. She knew the ramifications of plutonium poisoning. And so her doctor prescribes her Quaaludes to calm her down. And she begins necking them around the clock. I love that this is the 70s. And like the doctor's like, well, Karen, I'm going to give you some Quaaludes. You might feel rather sexy on these, but
God,
it's fine.
I wish I had a doctor like that.
Ugh, me too. A team of Kerr-McGee inspectors, they are decked out in like full face respirators. They've got their alpha counters, taped up gloves. They've got Johnny Cash-esque wading, you know, the fishing waders taped up. And they begin investigating the source of the contamination. And at Karen's request, they go over to her apartment and they give it the once over. So she's like, please go to my house. I think there's something in my house that's giving me this.
But did she like sneak some plutonium home in her like coffee cup or something?
Maybe, because there hadn't been an accidental spill at the plant. They knew it was nothing to do with the plant, so they say. And their alpha counters, they did their crazy up and down like woo blunt like dance. Plutonium's everywhere in Karen's house. Everywhere. So they begin taking the contaminated items outside, and they filled a 55-gallon drum with alarm clocks, cosmetics, records, curtains, pots, pans, bed sheets. And then besides the drum, they stacked her bed, the stove, the fridge full of bologna and cheese. It was actually the bologna and the cheese which radiated the highest in her humble flat. So she was using it as butter.
Processed meat, I'm sure, has other contaminants too.
All right.
I'm not surprised there, but the cheese, I don't know about that.
Even the photos of her children were contaminated. So Karen grew up in a small working class town. She was a straight A student, and she had three children with a common law husband, and he openly cheated on her, and she had an affair. So she leaves them all. She leaves, goes to Oklahoma.
Wait, he cheated on her and then she had an affair and just took off?
No, he cheated on her and she took off. She leaves them. She
and
leaves
the children.
She leaves all her children under the age of 10 and she
moves
to Oklahoma.
That's not very maternal.
Presumably, they say her plan was to send for them once she had been set up with a steady income. But again, they say that this is very Karen because Karen was really rebellious, but she was full of like total contradictions.
So she just
seems
would
interesting.
Desert her three children? That she gave birth to. These are biological kids.
They do say that she was planning on sending for them once she had like, because she didn't even have her own apartment. She had to like house share. She was like that kind of, didn't have enough money. So some of Karen's contradictions. She's very paranoid of cancer, yet she chain smokes constantly. She loved her children, but she left them. And she would rail against the safety in her workplace. Yet she would also smoke weed and then pop a bunch of pills before going to work. So like, what's more dangerous? Do you want a lab technician that's just stoned out their god?
Well, I mean, she wasn't the safety inspector.
No, but she's still working in nuclear power.
It sounds like everybody at this nuclear plant was stoned out of their gourd.
Yeah. No one can actually explain the source of the contamination, and the Atomic Energy Commission, the AEC, they're called in and all her belongings are carted away to the plant and they're buried, which is also standard procedure.
Well, yeah.
On Sunday, November the 10th, so this is just 5 days after she was first contaminated, she's whisked away to fly to an AEC lab in New Mexico and she's going to be fully checked out for her internal poisoning. And that same morning, the New York Times reported that according to internal documents that they had received from the AEC, they had repeatedly sought to suppress studies by its own scientists that found nuclear reactors were more dangerous than officially acknowledged, or that raised questions about reactor safety devices. One AEC study that had been kept confidential for 7 years predicted that a major nuclear accident could kill up to 45,000 people and pollute an area the size of Pennsylvania.
Look at Chernobyl.
This is in Oklahoma, though. Like, is anything really going to be missed? Like, did Timothy McVeigh not have, like, the right idea?
Well, like, I don't know about that. I think there are a couple people upset about the Murrah Federal Building.
Oh, yeah. Just but
a nuclear explosion?
Nah, it's Oklahoma.
Or any kind of fallout that would kill 47,000, that would be an issue.
It'd be like, you know, if we got rid of Liverpool, nobody's going to cry. Get rid of it. So the AEC actually had a 10-year record of blue penciling alarming data, soft soaping like test failures and glad handling an industry that increasingly appeared to not know what the fuck it was doing. So beyond all doubt, Kerr-McGee's factory was a hellish place to work. Between 1970 and 1975, there were 574 reported exposures to plutonium. And during a congressional investigation, Dr. Carl Morgan, he's a former health physicist at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, said that he'd never seen a facility so poorly run. And obviously Karen knows the horror of this place firsthand. Maybe that's why she's smoking weed. She's like, oh, fuck, I've got another 10-hour shift. I'm just going to get stoned.
I'm surprised she didn't like grow like a third limb or something.
That happens with radiation sickness.
Okay, yeah, and over time. I don't know. Who knows what happens to like plutonium exposure at this level or like a... I don't know, like a third breast. Who knows?
No, you die of like a really shitty cancer, dear. And it's at this moment that Cher and Kurt Russell are going to make an appearance. Kind of. They're going to be here. Because Cher and Kurt, they play Karen's roommates in the movie Silkwood. Movie came out in 1983, and it stars the unsinkable Meryl Streep playing Carol in the title room. She's a handsome woman, Meryl Streep.
So wait, Meryl Streep plays Karen?
Yes, and Cher and Kurt Russell play her roommate and kind of love interest. Cher's role is actually a composite of two real-life girlfriends of Karen, one of whom reacted so violently to the news of her car crash that she actually runs to the plant brandishing a shotgun. And the makers said if that scene had been put into the movie, people would have said it was a Hollywood exaggeration, but it really happened.
Whoa.
The real-life roommates were... Drew and Sherry, they'd both been contaminated, just like Karen. So they all go to the New Mexico facility together and they undergo a whole body count. And this includes meticulous probings of their skin, their orifices, all of them, intestines and lungs, and they're pissing into plastic bowls and they're shitting into Tupperware boxes, which a friend of Harrison's would claim was Instagram art in the not-so-distant future.
There's a obscure reference, a deep cut.
It's a deep cut that only Big Titty Goth Detective gets it. The three of them are all declared free of plutonium, though, and they're sent back to Oklahoma. And here, Karen just goes straight back to work. So she's arguing union demands for better training and higher injury benefits. And that's obviously going to go down really well in very socialist, worker-friendly America.
I'm surprised like she would go back there after being exposed to plutonium. Like you'd think she would sue the employers, get paid off, and go work at a fucking McDonald's.
You think they would fire her?
Or, I mean, pay her off and she'd go work at McDonald's or something. I wouldn't want to go back there.
By the time Kurt Russell and Cher would hear the news that a 1,638-pound Civic hatchback had been towed from a ditch, Karen was pronounced dead on arrival at Guthrie Hospital, the victim of multiple and compound fractures. All that was left in the ditch, as evidence, was a pile of documents from her manila folder and her uncashed paycheck. So this is where the myth begins that the folder was never found. Although she had told union members that it contained proof that quality control records were being falsified, none of the documents that were left behind substantiated her charges that the company was doctoring evidence of faulty fuel rods. The manila folder never went missing. It was found by the policeman there.
So wait, is it just part of the myth?
Yes.
That it disappeared?
Yeah. Okay. No, it was totally found and all of the documents were found inside of it and there was no document. Like, all the plant was like... What? Like,
but there's no evidence against them?
No.
Well, what was she doing? Where was she going with this manila envelope?
Well, she's presenting it to the union. She's going to present it still. The official verdict is that she had fallen asleep at the wheel. So Richard W. Prouty, he was the chief forensic toxicologist at the State Morgue in Oklahoma City. So he discovers 0.35 milligrams of methaqualone in her bloodstream, which is enough to, like, you know, people, that would put you to sleep. Although by this point, Karen had been abusing the drug pretty hard. And she wasn't actually known to ever nod out on it. Like, it didn't chill her out. She probably was the one who got the sexy side effects. And Karen was a very sexy, flirty woman.
Did they find alcohol in her blood as well?
No. Okay. Like, not enough where you'd be like, oh, this is totally explains everything. Hmm. It's not like our blood.
Yeah, but her history of drug use doesn't really help her cause here.
My dream is to go back to the 70s and take Quaaludes.
Yeah.
Like, why did they take away the good things?
Well, because we have stronger things now.
However, in her stomach, there were more Quaaludes waiting to dissolve. And the police officer who first investigated the accident, before getting the results of the autopsy, he said that she had probably fallen asleep at the wheel. Because it's common.
It sounds like, yeah. I mean, what time of night was it?
Not like too late.
Okay, but she was all hopped up on ludes.
Feeling really good.
Yeah, exactly.
Feeling pretty good.
Probably
myself.
Smoking weed.
Yeah, you know, the
next
tunes
thing you know,
are
she passes out, hits a tree.
CCR, Fortunate Song, blasting.
But what
on the
about
radio.
The forensic evidence with her car?
So there were suggestions that she had been rammed off the road by another car. Even in the movie Silkwood, this shows other car headlights stalking behind her, and there's a bumper hitting her off the road by a very mysterious killer. But according to the wrecker crew, it could easily have been done in the course of pulling her car from the ditch.
Oh, and they pulled it out of the ditch.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
The wrecker said they tried to drag the car over the culvert wall. Sorry, the culvert, it's not a ditch. And they failed after a half hour of grinding metal on concrete. And they actually only succeeded after developing a way to lift the car over the wall.
Well, that would have caused extensive damage.
Right, yeah. In 1976, so this is a year after her death, and partly vindicating her claims, the Kermagee plant closes, and Karen becomes a posthumous celebrity. But some people did take umbrage with her glorification. A New York Times review of the movie said that Miss Silkwood was not a nuclear Joan of Arc, but an activist who became a victim of her own infatuation with drugs. That tale, although not very seductive, at least sticks to the facts.
And a very irresponsible mother.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, she was from a shithole town. She got knocked up and then...
Three times.
Yeah, that's like the men's trap you with the babies. And then she's not making her own money and she gets to finally go out and live life. Like, you know, she's still a young woman. She's only 28. And this was a different time, Dee.
I think she chose lewds over children.
Good for her. And I would say this to any woman. Choose lewds over children.
Or wear a condom.
Again, Dee, it was a different time. So the handsome woman, Meryl Streep, said of Karen, the extent of her involvement in the nuclear issue was unusual. It's true what they say about women. They have more endurance. They don't always go the easiest way about things like this, but in the long run, they are effective. A lot of people got involved at ground level, but it's going to the utmost limit at whatever costs. That's so rare. So there is this YouTuber I follow. He's a guy called Kyle Hill. And he basically explains all things like nucleoid, so idiots like me can understand what's going. So if you are listening, Kyle, and I know you are because I'm sure you're a subscriber, I'd actually love to know his opinion on the Silkwood case. Because at the time, there was a huge nuclear panic. One of my favorite Blondie live performances is on the Midnight Special in 1979. This is when she's wearing like a blue Stephen Sprouse playsuit. Like, it's given her ultimate camel toe, but it's like the type of blue jumpsuit that only Debbie Harry can get away with. And during Heart of Glass, although Atomic would have been more topical, obviously, she delivers an anti-nuclear proliferation message in the middle of a disco song, right? And Debbie says, the use of nuclear power is only a symptom of our troubled time. But this is a time for all Americans to take control of their own lives and stop being pushed around and pressured. The race for nuclear superiority can only end with the destruction of civilization. Da da da. Da 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 da. Heart of Glass.
Oh.
And then FYI, I would also like to point out to everyone, and a fact I have learned many times off Kyle Hill, nuclear energy is around 350 times safer than coal. It's like the safest, right? So it is easy to present Karen as the poster child for anti-nuclear energy, but in reality, Karen was very, very paranoid. She's very scared. She's very full of pills that night she fell asleep at the wheel and enters oblivion.
Yeah, that's the thing. Her death sounds a little less suspicious to me than Barnett or the one we're about to talk about.
When you start looking into the facts of Karen, I think it's like easy, but I think the Boeing guy, I think people are looking for things that maybe aren't there. I always go for Occam's razor.
Well, yeah, but I think you're also being a devil's advocate. I would say with the Boeing guy, the timing is suspect.
I don't know.
The timing is suspect. His friends, family, lawyers were like, this makes no sense that this guy would just kill himself. He's never had any other instigation or any clues that this was his mentality at the time. It just seems really weird. Much like J. Clifford Baxter, this Enron executive who was found shot to death in his Mercedes-Benz in a very similar fashion.
Right.
So J. Clifford Baxter was an Enron vice chairman. He was 43. He was found shot to death in his Mercedes-Benz in the early hours of Friday morning, January 25th, 2002, near his home in Sugarland, Texas.
Sugarland. There's so many great places in Texas, and Sugarland is just probably a shithole, but it's called Sugarland. So how is it not good?
I'm sure it was like a really expensive housing,
a gated
community.
But if it's gated, how does somebody come in and kill him?
Well, I mean, you can walk. You can go in. Oftentimes,
no, not if you're in.
But
a
I don't
car.
Know. It sounds like this was just a neighborhood in the suburb. Like he was inside his found his in his Mercedes Benz, just parked in a turnaround on a street near his home.
Okay.
So officials moved swiftly to label his death a suicide. Local Justice of the Peace Jim Richard initially declared that Baxter died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound and no further inquiry was required. But within hours, he reversed himself, citing intense public interest in the death, and he ordered an autopsy. The county medical examiner conducted the autopsy and found the cause of death to be suicide by a penetrating gunshot to the head. The weapon was a .38 caliber revolver, which was found in the car next to his body, not in his hand.
Okay, yeah.
So that makes sense. But there are many obvious suspicions by the death of this critically important witness in the investigation of the criminal activities at Enron, which was the biggest corporate fraud in American history.
What is Enron? I know the name, but I've never bothered to look into it. Like, what does it do? Who are they?
Enron is, I think they were a American energy company.
Oh, what? They're not together anymore.
Based in Houston, Texas, founded by Kenneth Lay in 85. But yeah, it's like a
great, yeah.
Natural gas, like energy company.
So they're evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're kind of evil.
Okay.
But they're a utility company based in Texas. And I think they still are. Aren't they? Actually, you know what? I take it back. I think they did go under.
Did they go under when all of Texas was under snow and everyone nearly died?
No, that was actually recent. That's who the current utility company is. But yeah, I think Enron went under after this massive corporate fraud
was
unveiled. So Baxter quit as vice chairman of the company in May 2002. After reportedly he came into a conflict with other executives over these accounting gimmicks that he found that they were using to plunder billions of dollars. Like they were embezzling billions of dollars. He uncovered this through, faux companies and fake partnerships and all these sketchy dealings that they've been doing. And he went over and he was an executive, he was a vice chairman, and he got into a conflict with other executives that were like, you can't say anything about this. And he's like, oh no, we will.
You know what else he uncovered?
What?
He uncovered two of the managers having sex in the disabled toilet. He uncovered that and he blew the whistle on it.
There's nothing worse than when a comedian keeps going back to the joke. But I mean, I understand when it works sometimes, but it's like not even a funny joke to begin with. And then you keep referencing it. Ugh. God. It's like having like herpes.
Well, yeah, because it keeps coming back.
Just keeps coming back. The most disturbing account of Baxter's last days comes from a business associate who spoke to the New York Times. He said that 2 days before his death, Baxter was talking about needing a bodyguard at the time. before he was about to testify. Baxter was also named in a memo that was submitted by Enron Vice President Sharon Watkins in August 2002 to the chairman and CEO Kenneth Lay. She warned Lay that dubious off-the-books transactions with private partnerships set up by top Enron officials probably could cause the company to collapse in a welter of accounting scandals.
I'm sorry to everyone out there who is called Baxter, but I just can't take that name for a person seriously because it is very much a dog's name.
It's his surname.
Oh, what's his first name?
J. Clifford Baxter. He went by Cliff.
J. It's like Homer James Simpson.
It could probably John Clifford Baxter.
Clifford, J. Clifford Baxter sounds like it could be a kid's like cartoon character, like a dog, doesn't it? Like Clifford the Big Red Dog. That's what I'm thinking of.
I don't know. A lot of people were named Clifford at the time.
Cliff.
I just picture a white CEO.
Yeah, I'm just picturing a very white man.
Yeah, white man. But I mean, Texas, you know. She said that Baxter was opposed to many of these partnerships, and he's the one who uncovered the illegal transactions. Enron had also been engaged in massive illegal shredding of documents and deletion of computer files. I mean, there's billions of dollars here at stake, you know, with Enron's collapse. Even the highest levels of the Bush administration, because this is in Texas, are implicating the corruption of the financial political system behind Enron. I mean, they were investors.
Of course they were. And of course all these companies are corrupt. It's like, it's all of them are.
Given this organized shredding operation, and this, they're desperately trying to destroy incriminating documents, Baxter's evidence would be even more critical because if he could testify, I mean, he was a vice chairman. It's like the highest levels of the company. I think that posed a very major threat to Enron.
He's a bit silly for not going into
the
hiding.
Top brass. Well, I don't think he was that concerned. I mean, I think he obviously was in opposition to these other executives who probably, you know, gained unknown. It's unfathomable how rich these guys must have come from this scandal. And I think he probably, you know, obviously was opposed to it. He obviously has, you know, somewhat of a moral compass, like compass for a CEO of a major company. But you know, it seems like Enron, if they're destroying documents and they're engaged in such illicit activity, why wouldn't you prevent this guy, this whistleblower, from taking the witness stand? I mean, this guy has already went to, you know, report this internally. Now he's lawyering up. He's about to testify. Why wouldn't you take him out?
That's what I mean. Why wasn't his lawyer just saying, I think we're going to get you a cabin? And you're just going to go and sit there, like on the lake, you know, take your wife, take your kids, take your dog. That's probably also called Baxter. And just have a little bit of chill out time because you're about to go through something crazy stressful. And we're going to have a couple, you know, there's going to be a couple of plainclothes guys who will watch you when you go into town to get your supplies for the grill. They love to grill in there. You know, make some Texas toast, mate.
I don't know. I mean, maybe he didn't think he was at that level of risk. But I mean, it's weird that a potential whistleblower dies less than 2 weeks after his name comes to public attention, because I mean, this scandal was so huge all over the media.
But that could be a cause for why he killed himself, though, because his name has now come out that he's betrayed all these very, very rich people. And it could be a case of I have to kill myself before they kill me.
I mean, it's possible he could have taken his own life, but you know, there need to be a thorough investigation, and the justice of the peace at the time was already willing to say, oh no, it's a suicide.
That's dodgy, but that's also law enforcement. I mean, they get paid fuck all. They do fuck all because they get paid fuck all, and they've got 200 other jobs to do.
But think about this though, the local authorities in Houston, Enron like has so much influential, like corporate power in Houston.
Yeah.
I'm sure they own the police. I'm sure they own that justice of the peace and probably all the judges.
I think we should just shame them like our Bud Dwyer ways. Like just bring them before a tele crew, let them take out some notes and then just be like, either you pull the trigger or somebody else will.
But
do it for our amusement, mate.
This is what I find odd is the circumstances of Cliff's life here.
All right.
So a guy like this, why would he commit suicide? He wasn't known by family or friends. He was a father. He had a 16-year-old son, an 11-year-old daughter. His family life was seemingly happy. He lived in a massive home in this very affluent suburb. He wasn't known to have been suffering from depression or any mental health problems. Multi-millionaire. He was a multimillionaire. He had $30 million from the sale of his stock in Enron. And then he retired. And so, you know, with his 401k, I imagine he had millions of dollars.
Yeah, but I also imagine maybe he felt like the other guy with Boeing. Maybe he feels very fucking useless now.
Well, his first appearance in the coverage of Enron when, you know, I think this guy knew Enron was going down. He knew Enron was involved in some shady, illicit type of activity, and I think he wanted to distance himself from it. But I mean, if you think about it, he wasn't linked to these shady executives that were, you know, plundering money and profiting off of other people's misfortune here. He was presented as an opponent of corporate fraud, almost a hero.
Yeah, but he's still involved. He's still a CEO of this evil. Well, he was a CEO.
But he's the one who uncovered this and railed against it. I mean, he's kind of like an Aaron Brockovich in a way.
Yeah, but Aaron Brockovich wasn't the one poisoning the well. Like, he literally was poisoning the well and was part of this.
He wasn't part of it. He's the one that spoke against it. And they kind of, and that's why they alienated him from it. And that's why he went public with his testimony, his knowledge.
I just thought he was. Okay.
Friends and business associates that were interviewed said they were just completely shocked by this supposed suicide. Although there were conflicting accounts of his state of mind after the bankruptcy of Enron. So I wonder if he had sold his stock at the right time, he would have had a lot of money. But I wonder if he had, I don't know, maybe he had other investments related to Enron that did fail. Yeah. And went under. I don't know. After the company went bankrupt.
Well, that's a big reason why a lot of rich men end up offing themselves, is because they lose all the money. Like, how do you turn around to your wife and your like kids and say, that's it now, we have to go and live in an apartment?
And an executive from PG&E said that my impression of Cliff Baxter was that this is an enormously confident guy who came up here to get the thing done, and he did. The image I had of him at the time was totally at odds with the tragedy today. I mean, he was self-assured. He was very friendly. This is practically the last person in the world you'd ever expect to commit suicide.
People always say that about suicides. People always act surprised like when it happens, because the very nature of suicide is to be secretive. I don't buy that.
This guy was at the brink of being a national hero, exposing massive corporate fraud. There would be movies about this guy. There would be books about this guy. It's just the fact that all of a sudden, 2 weeks after his name became public, he was taken out.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it makes you wonder with whistleblowers, when somebody, you know, like, I'm surprised Snowden was never taken out, or Julian Assange is still living.
Yeah, I'm surprised about Snowden, but Snowden is obviously under Putin's protection now. But well, Julian, I think if he'd ever have left the embassy, would people have not been trying to get him?
It makes you wonder, though, what, I guess, inspires you to become a whistleblower? Like, Snowden knew, I mean, he was going to face 35 years in prison. Chelsea Manning, she must have known that, like, she's going to go to prison for a long time if she's caught, which she will get caught. Is it worth it?
For some of them, it is, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think it's almost a selfless act. I think some people, and maybe this guy from Enron, Cliff Baxter, was trying to save his own skin by disassociating himself from these evil corporate executives. But other people, like Snowden, Julian Assange to an extent, I think Assange had some monetary motivation as well.
Of course.
And also, I think he's a bit of a narcissist. But Edward Snowden, I mean, unless this guy strongly disliked the U.S., and was trying to fuck over the West and, you know, move to Russia. Maybe that was his master plan. But I think someone like Chelsea Manning, I think she was exposing, you know, what was going on.
Yeah, like Serpico.
Yeah, I mean, and then someone like Frank Serpico. I think some of these people, it's a selfless act that you're willing to engage in despite the consequences.
You know, I'm just a very selfish person. It's why I don't have children, and I like saying the word no a lot. I just can't be arsed with the company. I'd be like, yeah, they're all corrupt, mate. I'll just quit. I'll go get another job somewhere else in another shithole company.
Yeah, I don't know if I would just, because I'm a virtuous person, would go out and whistleblow on a company. But if they wrong me.
Oh, they better watch out.
Oh, I will. I will get revenge. I will. But I mean, it's obvious though. I mean, you look at some of the famous whistleblowers through history, their actions have led to major like cultural and political shifts. So, you know, new safety regulations, increased awareness of the role of policing. You know, I think they're obviously doing, you know, vast amounts of good.
Yeah, good for them.
But. It just seems like it's just a moment of self-sacrifice.
It's like, get another hobby, you know, take your kid out.
And maybe sometimes,
go to the lake with your kid instead.
Sometimes it might result in your disappearance or untimely death.
Off ludes.
I'm interested to see what happens with this guy from Boeing. People, this is episode 937 here, Sick and Wrong. We got some phone calls coming up. 323-522-4032 is the number of the Sick and Wrong hotline. But first, here's a quick message from Adam and Eve.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie?
Hot.
Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs.
3.
For a little inspiration, plus a free extra gift so sensual, we can't even mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type diddle for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code DIDDLE at adamandeve.com.
So we got a couple phone calls to get to. People, you can call the Sick and Wrong hotline at 323-522-4032 or just email the show, sickandwrongpodcast@gmail.com, and send us an MP3. We are trying to build up a backlog of calls, so give us a call, especially if you have a call about being a whistleblower. Or a snitch.
Yeah, do you know any grasses?
Yeah, you ever grass somebody out? Give us a call and let us hear the story. I'm sure it's justified. Anyway, the first call that we have here is from a listener named Jason Decay.
Oh, cool. He's ace.
Calling in about Valentine's Day.
Hi, Dean Gate. This is Jason Decay. Just wanted to call in and tell you guys my favorite Valentine's Day story. So years back, I had a booking in Chicago at this club. And behind the booth...
What does he do? Is he a musician or a comedian or something?
Maybe he's a DJ, but...
Oh, is he a DJ?
You know, I did just go off on a little tangent inside my brain then. You know, if we add our names together, it's DK, isn't it? DK.
Like Dead Kennedys?
DK, I'm onto something. Because we're both goths who like dead things. Like DK.
Oh, DK. Okay, D. Yeah, I thought you meant like DK, like the letters DK. Like
we could also have DK. We could get the Dead Kennedys logo tattooed on each of it. It wouldn't look at all douchey.
Yeah, I might pass on that. Although I don't have my taint tattooed.
You should put the DK logo there.
It's a really I'd be good honored. Idea.
There was this huge projector screen, and I asked the promoter if I could bring in a movie during my set. So he puts in the movie playing, and about halfway through my set, I see the owner of the club come running across the dance floor, jumps up on stage, and starts yelling at the promoter. Well, the promoter... stop the movie and everything. And the movie that I was playing was The Devil's Experiment from the Guinea Pig series. Sure enough, easy to say that my maiden call didn't work out as planned. With that, question for both of you guys.
Wait. What is the Guinea Pig series? Did you recognize what he was saying?
No. Need to Google it. It sounds like something Harrison would know.
Let me play this again.
That I was playing was The Devil's Experiment from the Guinea Pig series. Sure enough, easy to say that my maiden call didn't work out as planned.
The Devil's Experiment from the Guinea Pig series.
Question for both of you guys. Do you guys remember your first rave? And do you guys have any favorite electronic musicians that you guys like? I love you guys. And keep it sick and wrong. Bye.
That's kind of on the spot here. Do you remember your first rave? And what electronic musicians do you like? So he must be electronic DJ.
Yeah.
Like electronica.
Jason, he's a sweetheart, and this might come as no shock or surprise to you. I have never once been a raver. I will never go to a rave. I just despise being around happy people. Even when I took lots of ecstasy, I despised how happy I was on it and how loving I was and how I wanted to dance to techno music. Techno music probably from the early 2000s is about like... as electronic as I will get. But we've spoke about Blondie. I think Jimmy Destri is highly underrated as an electronic musician. He's fantastic.
Well, you went to raves, though, I'm sure, right?
I went to, like, Rave in the Cave, which is, like, a fucking Penrith
cool.
thing.
Where was that? It was, a DJ in a cave?
Well, not like a DJ. It would just be, like, through a shitty subsystem, sound system. But it's actually in a cave, and we would all take ecstasy. But I've never been to, like, Creamfields or anything like that. I would never go to
What's
Ibiza.
Creamfields?
Creamfields is, like, everyone in Britain's laughing at you now. Creamfields is,
did you call it Creamfields?
It's called Creamfields.
Creamfields? Why is it called that?
Because it's this name, and it's where all the best DJs in the world. I think it's, like, a week-long thing, Creamfields.
Jesus Christ.
And there's a lot of ecstasy.
Rather
and
masturbate with a handful of glass.
Yeah, and another reason you want to masturbate with a handful of glasses, because guess where it is in Britain?
Where?
Liverpool.
Oh, it's in Liverpool too.
Oh, fuck that.
I'm like, a hard pass on that.
Fuck yeah. So yeah,
I'm too old for that anyway.
I've never raved. I've never been type of the rave culture. And apart from when I'm on ecstasy, when I listen to techno music, you know, I was also listening to new metal at the same time. Like, you'll dance to anything on ecstasy. Now I'm older and I don't take ecstasy anymore. I'm certainly never ever, like, you know where my dream hell would be? Like, if I had to go somewhere, I'd be like, this is actual hell. Burning Man.
Ooh, Burning Man would be... Actually, Burning Man would be cooler than a rave. I would want to... What I've always said about Burning Man, I'd like to be wealthy enough to get helicoptered in there only at night when it's not fucking hot.
And
check out all the... I mean, the art's amazing. And, like, not necessarily drugs. I don't mind just, like, smoking good weed and checking it out. But then getting the fuck out of there before sunrise.
Well, I imagine everyone at Burning Man just sleeps all day.
Yeah, most people... I don't know. I would never do it. I could never do it. It's too dirty. But I wouldn't mind spending a few hours just walking around with all the fire and the art and all that. It's supposed to be really cool.
It's not for me.
I would definitely do that. But I could never, there's no way I could handle it. I can't even fucking camp.
Yeah.
Anyway. You know, I was also never a huge fan of raves, although I have been to my fair share. Having gone to college, University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, we used to go to a lot of raves in Detroit. That was a thing. It was like, and it was one of those things back then where you'd be like, you know, someone, there's a girl I dated that was kind of like, she was kind of a hippie sort of, not really a Burning Man chick. Burning Man wasn't really a thing out there, but she was definitely kind of a industrial chick, but also kind of hippie. And she was really into ecstasy.
I thought you were going to say she was really into shuffling. I don't know if anybody else gets this on that Instagram.
What's shuffling?
It's these people, Dee. These people who are, it's a dance. And they're just like, I thought my life was shit until I started shuffling. And then
I've
they do
it.
Oh, it's rave shuffling. Dance. Shuffling. It's awful.
I never didn't know that. But anyway, she would get like a piece of paper with directions to this like warehouse in the middle of fucking downtown Detroit. And you'd go and you'd find this warehouse. And yeah, sure enough, there'd be a bunch of like ravers in there. Good music. I mean, it was kind of cool. Not really my scene. but I used to go and good drugs. I would say better drugs that made me tolerate the music.
That's exactly why. And then as soon as
but the music isn't like offensive. It's not like, you know, listening to like Blues Traveler or something or Fish. Like at least that music is a repetitive beat. You're on a lot of drugs. You're just like, all right, sounds good.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know, it's not offensive. But yeah, you know, I did that. I think the best rave that I've ever been to was in Barcelona when this would have been like 1999 when P-Town, Kessler and I went from Amsterdam on our way to Ibiza. We were trying to get to Ibiza, which we never actually happened. But we were in Barcelona. We met these like American chicks that were going to this rave at this castle called like La Terraza or something. And one of them spoke Spanish. So she found out how to get there and we went with them. And it was just like each room was playing a different kind of techno music. And I remember like using my rudimentary Spanish. I was able to get a bunch of ecstasy from this guy. And we took all this ecstasy. We're going around and it was kind of raining, but it was really warm. And then girls took their shirts off. And we're just kind of standing there. I'm like, this is the best night of my life. Surrounded by all these hot Spanish girls that were topless.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool. That was a good night.
Oh, what? Did it not end badly for you free? It feels like it should end badly for you free.
No, you know, it's funny. Didn't score, tried to score, obviously did not. That's the other thing too. Usually when you're that fucked up, it's
you
not
can't
like
have
you're
sex.
Fucking, yeah. But the funny part of how it all ended, I guess it did kind of end somewhat badly. We left, like the rave kind of ended at like 7 or 8 in the morning.
As a rave
and,
should.
Yeah, and people were outside. We were still fucking wired. And people outside were handing out flyers like, yeah, after party, after party. And so we didn't want to, and Kessler was like, no, we're going to the after party. And so we end up like going, me, P-Town, and Kessler, end up going to this after party at a place, it was just on the flyer called The Bunker. And so we go to this place, we go in and it was downstairs and it was kind of dark. And I remember, and it smelled weird. And I remember looking around, I'm like, I think this might be a gay bar.
It's not any reflection on my bunker, by the way, which was none of those things.
But this place was really dark. It was just a bunch of dudes hanging out. And we sit down and I'm kind of like, yeah, I think this might be a gay bar. We should jet. And P-Town was so out of it. He was just passed out on the bar.
Oh, shit.
And like, we're like, get up. I think we're going to go. And he's like, no, dude, it's fine. Just get a drink. And I was like, all right. So we ordered a drink. And I'm like, I don't see any girls in here. I think he's like, no, there's some girls there. And Kessler like kind of looks over. And he's like, I don't think those are real girls. And so we're sitting there. And this dude kept coming up to me and rubbing my back and be like, ¿Tienes cigarrillo? Cigarillo.
What does that mean?
A cigarette. And I was just like, yeah. And then he was kind of like trying to chat with me. He couldn't speak any English. And I was like, dude, let's just go. And so we ended up going back, get back to the hotel. At this point, it would have been like, I don't know, 10:30 or 11. We pass out and the fucking hotel wakes us up and kicks us out because it was like time to check out. And we were trying to like, we'll just pay for another night. They're like, no, it's all sold out.
Oh, shit.
So we fucking got booted with our bags, didn't know where to go, didn't have enough money to go to Ibiza. And like, I was, I was like sitting there trying, you had like little cards that you put in payphones back then.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. And I was trying to like call the airline to try to see if we could get our, because we had one extra day there and I was trying to get our plane switched over. And like, I'm sitting there and I don't know, those guys were just hungover, just sitting down like in this park. And I'm sitting there and this old man comes by and just takes the phone card. And just takes off. And I'm like, what the fuck? And so I start running, being like, damelo, like, give me it. You know, chingate tu madre, like yelling at the guy chasing him. And then I turn around and get nailed by a bus.
Oh, I remember you telling me a story because this is how your granddad died.
Yeah, I got fucking hit hard. And I flew and I was on the ground and like, my friends come over laughing, and the bus driver, I remember this, the bus driver kind of gets off, stops the bus, comes over and looks at me and kind of like slapped me in the face and then poured a little water on my face. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? And then he just was like, okay, gets back in the bus and drives away.
Well, he's got a job to do.
Yeah, but the whole side of my body was purple.
You're really lucky you didn't get like internal injuries.
Yeah. And so anyway, we ended up changing our flight, going back to Amsterdam. But yeah, that was the best rave I've ever been to. And as far as like electronic musicians I like, and I was into Underworld. You know what band I kind of liked? The Bloody Beetroots. I don't know if you ever heard them.
No. Electronica. But who's that fucking band that did My Head Full of Doubt Around Here? Overground, watch this space. That band.
I don't know.
With the chick singer who's a junkie. It'll come to me later on. They've got a funny little name, but they're electronic. I like them.
I didn't mind like Massive Attack, but it's not really techno music. There wasn't much. I mean, New Order, but New Order's not really falls into that camp either.
No.
But I was never like a big, I mean, I played a lot of house music when I was a strip club DJ and all that, but I was just never into it. Never listened to it, you know, on my own. I mean, I like Lords of Acid. I don't think they count either.
I don't think they count either.
But yeah, I wasn't, I mean, I can appreciate the music. You know, it's better than fucking Fish, put it that way.
Yeah, although, yeah.
I just looked up
the guinea pig film.
What Guinea Pig Devil's Experiment is. And this sounds like something I definitely should see. So Jason Decay, thank you for recommending this. It's a 1985 Japanese horror film. Written and directed by Satoru Ogura, and it's the first film in the Guinea Pig series. The film depicts a group of three men who graphically abuse a woman in a number of ways. It's presented in a found footage style with on-screen text claiming the film features real footage of torture, intended as an experiment on the human's body tolerance to pain.
It
sounds awful. It's called a faux snuff film.
The band I was thinking about is Sneaker Pimps, by the way.
Oh, Sneaker Pimps. I don't think they count as, well, I guess they're kind of electronica.
Yeah, I don't know, but I liked that.
I'm talking like house, I think is what he's referring to, or techno or something.
Yeah, we are the wrong crowd.
No. Mate,
if you want to know a band from the 1970s, a punk band from Australia in like 1972, we're the people to ask. Like, don't ask us who a house musician is.
I liked, remember that guy Alec Empire from Atari Teenage Riot?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I kind of like that. Yeah. I think that's sort of electronic.
Kind of, sort of, yeah, but not.
Definitely going to have to check out this this guinea pig movie. This sounds like a great one for a quinceañera. Good background film.
How many 15-year-old Mexican girls do you know?
None. But exactly. I'm just saying, if I'm ever invited to one, it's a good movie.
Well, this
just
is why.
If they're playing like Frozen or whatever, just switch out. Do a switcheroo.
Why would a 15-year-old girl be watching Frozen, D?
Frozen
What's
was
wrong
huge.
With her?
Frozen was huge.
It's huge for 5-year-olds. It's not huge Frozen, for like 15-year-olds.
Lots of adults went and checked out Frozen.
Adults with their kids. Not a 15-year-old girl, D.
All right. Okay, I don't know what 15-year-old Mexican girls watch on TV.
You're also the person who, I was like, no, Ozzy can't control a gun or a bow and arrow at the moment. And you were like, yes, he can. I'm like, he can't even speak. And you think he could hold a bow and arrow.
If I got Ozzy a little gun, he would love it. I got him like this toilet that if you opened up, it sprays water. He was running around spraying everybody. I think he'd be fine with a squirt gun.
Okay,
and my,
that
my
type of gun would be fine.
It.
All right, we'll get him water toys next. Not perverted water toys for the people at home.
Anyway, I'd like to know the reaction of this the owner of the venue when you start playing that movie. I'm sure he didn't love that.
Well, he obviously didn't.
Anyway, next call we have here is from a very, very drunk man. This guy is so inebriated, he's hard to understand. We'll see if you can actually make it out.
All right, let's do it.
Part one.
Well, you know, Twister, and listened to the podcast for a long time. It's been a long time since I called in. Mm-hmm. I fucking tried to call the old number, and apparently it's some kind of fucking spa.
Is there an old number?
Wait, it's a rub and tug now? Yeah, yeah. The old one, God, it was like a Seattle-based number. I can't remember it. Like 666 something.
I can't even remember this number, and I've been listening to you say it for like nearly 4 years.
Yeah, no, the old number was a Seattle-based number, whereas this one is
But when
LA.
Did you change over, though?
We lost it. It just, the service used to be a free service that you could sign up online and get a number, and then it just sort of went under.
Yeah, when?
When Harrison started, so we, it was
that
probably...
That was a long fucking time ago.
Yeah, at least like six, 7 years ago.
Fucked with them for a while. Little girl didn't want to
he called the spot.
But they got it going for a little bit. You motherfuckers gotta like tell everybody what's going on a little better. Love you guys. But
oh bless.
Keep it real.
Keep it real.
Okay, all right, all right. So we got to tell everybody what's going on.
I'd like to know.
Keep it real.
What's he on?
I think he's on a lot of Jack Daniels.
I want some of the good things that he's on.
I miss Blackwood.
Oh, he's back.
Part two.
Oh.
I miss Blackwood. I miss him a lot.
Oh, he misses Wackerly.
We all miss Wackerly.
He was great. Fuck you, D. You think you're all cool. Wackerly was a man, wow, man.
Wackerly is way cooler than me.
Wackerly was like a wow, wow, man.
Guy.
He wrote this on the
he
script.
He's a cool shit. You know, cool with the cool stuff.
This guy is loaded.
Back in the days, all the good shit. Blah, blah, blah.
This guy's great.
You know, Glasgow shit. Greg is easier to understand.
He thinks he's hassling you because you think you're so cool, and then he's just making up little songs like "cool, cool."
Do you think you're hot shit, but you're really just cold diarrhea? All right, I'll take that.
Wait, what is it that John Lovitz says at the start of Happiness?
You're shit, and I'm champagne, and you will always be shit till the day you die. That's a good movie, Happiness, if you haven't
Happiness
seen it.
Happiness and Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Welcome to Dollhouse, also another two very quotable movies.
Very quotable. Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, drunk guy, and we appreciate you calling in and sharing your opinion on Wackerly and me.
I hope he hasn't had too bad of a hangover. Bless.
People can call the Sick on hotline at 323-522-4032. If you haven't already bought some Sick and Wrong merch, I don't know what you're waiting for. There's probably a sale going on right now. So head on over to the TeePublic store, sickandwrongpodcast.com/shop. Click on the picture of the Pope and buy yourself something nice to wear around town. And once again, thank you to all the listeners who support us on Patreon and Apple Podcasts. You are the ones that keep this show going. And we do appreciate your support. Patreon.com/sickandwrong. And finally, here's Sick and Wrong Song of the Week, keeping in the theme of snitches. This is a song called Rap Snitch Knishes by MF Doom.
Okay.
The rapper MF Doom featuring Mr. Fantastic. Do you know what a knish is?
It's like a Jew food, isn't it?
It is. It's like a traditional like Eastern European Jewish snack food consisting of like a filling covered with dough that's baked or deep fried. It's almost like a Jewish donut.
Oh, that sounds delicious. What do you traditionally have them with? Like just sugar?
Yeah, usually I thought there's kind of like deep fried little like almost like donut holes.
I'm also going to put
It's been a while since I've had one.
I'm going to put this out here. Latkes. I could only have them with sour cream. I don't understand people who have them with applesauce.
I'm not a big fan of Eastern European food in general, and definitely not a big fan of Jew food.
Why aren't you a fan of Eastern European food?
It's just gross, and it's heavy, and it's usually very
delicious.
Meat.
A lot of it is meat, but a lot of it, the dough is delicious. It's undeniably delicious. Potatoes, delicious.
Yeah,
sour cream,
it's
delicious.
It's heavy food. I'm not like borscht. Not too into it.
You don't Bosch isn't even heavy. It's delicious. And it gets you through the winter, mate.
Yeah, traditional like Ashkenazi Jewish food. It's not my bag, put it that way. But what is my bag is MF Doom.
Yeah.
People might remember him. He used to wear that mask kind of like similar to Dr. Doom, you know, the villain from Fantastic Four. He used to wear like a silver mask like that. Did you know that MF Doom died suddenly? In October 2020, like during the height of the pandemic.
I did not know this.
Yeah, I was reading about this. So 3 years after his shocking death, he was only 49 years old, his wife has revealed what caused her husband's death.
COVID.
What happened here. Yeah, and I think there's definitely a lawsuit going on.
Oh, good.
So MF Doom was born in Hounslow, London. He was British. Oh. Daniel DeMille. He died on October 31st, 2020, of what was known as unknown causes. But his wife, Jasmine, has been looking into it, and there's an inquest that found that he died after his condition suddenly deteriorated while he was in the hospital. She said that her husband was in good shape at the time, but he did have a couple of health issues, such as high blood pressure, which was leading to weight gain, anxiety, and he had been prescribed ACE inhibitors to treat his high blood pressure. But after two doses, he developed breathing problems, and he was sent to the ER because his tongue and his throat swelled. She said that the rapper actually called her in distress from the hospital when the swelling got worse. So because of the COVID-19 restrictions in place, she couldn't even visit him.
Oh, yeah, sad.
And so that's when they ended up turning his respirator off. That was helping him breathe. I guess he had been getting better. They turned it off. And I guess then he attempted to get out of his bed. And I guess he collapsed. He suffered from respiratory arrest. He died.
Holy shit.
They found him on the floor. Doctors did note that the swelling of his tongue and his throat and his lips was a rare side effect of ACE inhibitors. And it caused a condition called angioedema. Similar to hives, actually.
Sounds like they weren't so ace after all.
There's an inquiry into his death, and I'm sure there's a lawsuit.
Yeah, I hope she gets some money. That's a really sad way to die,
especially during that period when people were dying. You couldn't even see them.
Yeah, and doctors couldn't even be in the room with you or anything. Yeah. So yeah, sad.
Anyway, we're gonna end the show here with Rap Snitch Knishes from MF Doom's album Food. Good record. Came out in 2004.
It's like an album I would write.
Rest in peace, MF Doom. People, remember, don't snitch unless you're a whistleblower. Because whistleblowers don't get snitches. They tend to get riches.
Oh, okay.
We'll be back next week with episode 938. Till then, take it sleazy.
Yo. MF Doom.
Mr. Fantastic.
Mr. Fantastic.
Villain.
What up, nigga?
Ain't nothing. What's the word?
It's cracking, boy.
Same old shit, kid.
Man. Rap snitches, man. Shit is bugged out, man. What the fuck, man?
She telling me.
Niggas running their mouth. Telling anything. Anything. Rap snitches, telling all their business. Sit in the court and be their own star witness. Do you see the perpetrator? Yeah, I'm right here. Fuck around, get the whole label sent up for years. Rap snitches, telling all their business. Sit in the court and be their own star witness. Do you see the perpetrator? Yeah, I'm right here. Fuck around, get the whole label sent up for years. Tight profile, low, like eight and paid in full. Attract heavy cash, cut the game centrifugal. Mr. Fantastic, long throw like elastic. Got my life with twin Glocks that's made out of plastic. Can't stand a brown nosing nigga, fake ass bastard. Admiring my style, tore a bust through Manhattan, plotting, playing the quickest. My flow's the sickest, my hoes be the thickest, my dro the stickiest. Street nigga, stamped and bona fide. When beef jump, niggas come get me, cause they know I ride. True to the ski mask, New York's my origin. Play a fake gangster like an old accordion. According to him, when the D's rushed in, complication from the wild testimony was thin. Caused his man to go up and off the board, hit him again. Lame rap snitch, nigga, even told on the Mexican. Rap snitches, telling all their business. Sit in the court and be their own star witness. Do you see the perpetrator? Yeah, I'm right here. Fuck around, get the whole label sent up for years. Rap snitches, telling all their business. Sit in the court and be their own star witness. Do you see the perpetrator? Yeah, I'm right here. Fuck around, get the whole label sent up for years.
True, there's rules to this shit. Fools didn't care. Everybody wanna rule the world with tears for fear. Yeah, yeah, tell them, tell it on the mountain hill. Running up their mouth bill. Everybody down still. Informer, keep it up and get tested. Pop through your bubble vest or double breasted. He keep a lab down south in the Little Beast. So much heat, you would've thought it was the Middle East. A little grease always keeps the wheels a spinning. Like sitting on 23s to get the squealers grinning. Hitting on many trees, feel real linen. Spitting on enemies, get the steel for 10 men. With no brains but gum flap. He said his gun clapped, then he fled after one slap. Son, shut the trap, save it for the bitches. Delicious rap snitch commissions.
Know what I'm saying?
It's terrible.
Crazy, man. I'm just analyzing this whole game. It's just bugged out, man. Niggas snitching. Telling on their own selves.
It's a horror.
Fuck around. Gonna get anybody bag, man.
Atrocity.
Fuck around. Get your mama bag, nigga. You know your grandma used to be bootlegging. Fake hustling, nigga. Yeah, I'm right here.
There's only three things I enjoy in life: flicking bean, eating Regine, and driving green.